Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everybody, to Ruby Rogues. I'm John Epperson, and today on our panel, we have Luke Stutters.
Hello.
And Valentino Stoll.
Hey there.
And today, for a special guest, we have Vlado Singel. Did I pronounce that correctly, or did I butcher it pretty bad?
Yeah, Vlado Singel.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Sweet. Well, Vlado, would you start off just by telling us a little bit about yourself, how you maybe got into Ruby, and then afterwards we can introduce the topic.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately, I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topenddevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv. And I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topenddevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topenddevs.com.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, hello, everybody. I was always interested in, during my childhood, how stuff works, what makes car go, how do these computers know everything, all this stuff. And when I was like 12, I got the first computer. It was Intel 386 machine with a turbo button, you know. It could go to 20 or 40 hertz, and I think it had,
yeah.
It was crazy. And I think it had like 4 megabytes of RAM. And when it arrived, it was 1992, something like that. And nobody didn't know what to do with it. So it was just standing there, and I saw the monitor, and I was thinking, oh, everything is there. What is this box next to it? You know, it was standing for a few months, and you couldn't buy any books, magazines in Croatia during that time. So, and luckily we found one friend that had a computer, and he came and he installed some games and introduced me to DOS commands. And I started hacking that a bit, trying just typing random commands and guessing stuff because I didn't have any literature or anything. And yeah, I really got interesting. And then I was picking up basically books from family, friends, and whatever I could find about computers and stuff, and was learning about it. And like, yeah, I got pretty good in it. And when there was a time to start studying or to go to college, I was between going to mechanical engineering or computer science. And I said like, I will handle this myself. Let's study mechanical engineering. And in the end, I graduated on railway vehicles. which means maybe that Rails was my destiny, actually, in the end.
Right. You're on the right. You were on the right track.
Yeah, yeah, right. And later I went to Faculty of Economics to study quality management because I saw myself like in some high management and position or something like that. But they didn't went like that. Basically, while I was on college, I worked part-time and I got a job at Biggest Creation newspaper, and they were starting like building the web presence, putting the articles online and doing all the stuff. And I got a job to enter the cinema shows and events in the some really bad CMS stuff. And it was relatively boring, but there were things like that no one could do. Like they didn't know what to do with XML. So I figured it out and I got interested in all this stuff. And I was programming a bit during the time, like some programs in Fortran or Java, simple ones for basketball statistics or things like that. And very quickly, I started building websites for family and friends and all this stuff and used PHP most of the time. And in the end, I got a job in mechanical engineering, but I was still programming and I found out about the Ruby and Rails in .NET magazine that I was buying in Zagreb, in capital town. Nice. And it was like, ooh, this is great. This really looks good. And the company I worked with, we had like 2 months of vacation or leave during the summer. We didn't work during the summer. And I started doing online jobs during the summer in Ruby. And Ruby was so awesome that I just said, oh, this is something that I would like to do for the living. So, yeah. I just ditched my management career and started starting enjoying Ruby and Rails since then, I think.
Nice. So one of the things that we were planning to talk about today is your gem that you made, Active Record CTE. How did that come about? Like what inspired you to do that?
Basically, I currently work for a German company called BetterDoc, which helps patients find the right doctor for their problems. And one of the tools that helps us with that is to search for a best clinic for a specific diagnosis or for the operation and stuff. And each of these stuff has its own code, and it's millions and millions of these codes. And it's like on a yearly basis, each clinic needs to report all the data, and it's millions and millions of data each year. And it was pretty hard to get all of this data quickly to the researchers in an efficient way. And I was researching the Postgres, what capabilities it has to make this performant and stuff. And I came to common table expressions. And it was great because it helps you to get the data in a logical way. So step by step, you first check all the medical topics and data that are relevant for that code or part of that code. Then you can calculate some statistics in it. We calculate some percentiles. Is it in this range? Is it in this range and stuff? And in the end, you need to say in this geographical area and stuff like that. And all of that, we had like 100 lines of SQL, raw SQL to have it. And I wanted to write that into Rails somehow. And the first try was with the raw SQL, because Active Record didn't support the common table expression natively. And we just put everything into raw SQL. But it was a bad, because you needed to count on the same queries. You needed to do pagination, geolocation, and it was very, very hard to maintain. And I started looking for alternatives, and I saw the error stuff. Actually, I don't know the right pronunciation. I just call it arrow.
That is right.
And it was a big improvement, because you could programmatically build all these queries and share them between different methods and stuff. But the one thing that we still missed is you couldn't chain them easily. And you couldn't do calculations or aggregation easily on them with standard Rails methods. And one more very important thing for us is we needed to cache the result when you get it once. So when you search for one code or one part of the code, we want to cache that. And with the Active Record relation, that works out of the box. I was actually, we were eager to work with Active Record Relations. And I found that the Postgres Sext, or I don't know, I think it's the Postgres Sext gem that had a support for the common table expressions integrated. And I wanted to use it, but it didn't work with the Rails 6. So in the end, I did what I think, John, you also did. You wrote the monkey patch to put it all together and to work with your application, basically.
Yep, something like that.
And that you get the relations.
Yeah, I have a little folder with, like, everybody has like that little extensions folder, and I feel like Hash is like a commonly edited one. I think I have like four apps where there's like Errol things that are edited, and CTEs are totally one of the things that's in there for me because I needed CTEs for multiple applications. So yeah,
I can imagine. And basically what triggered the build of the gem is that I didn't like that I needed to patch all these methods, and some stuff were hard to patch. So I opened the PR to merge, to add the common table expression support to Rails. And it got some traction, but it never got merged. It got like stale mark from the Rails bot a few times. And every time someone comments, oh, can we somehow merge this? Can this be revisited? But it never got merged. Actually, a few days ago, it got to stale state and someone commented again and wanted to merge it. Yeah, and I think the main reason, at least from the feedback of the Rails core, is that they think it's a too low level API, and they would like to build something more, was the right word, something more geared, like with more functionality. Because with common table expression, you have one part where you build a common table expression, then you need to use it.
Yep.
And you either need to modify the from or join or whatever, or you do multiple steps. So they would like to see some API that bundles all this together into some functionality, I think.
Yeah, anytime I see something with, you know, a rail related features that are needed to be used in Rails, it kind of gets a bad rap of feedback from the core team.
But I will, dude, so I was looking at this gem, and kind of in reply to you, Valentino, right? Like, I was looking at this gem and I was like, this is the API that I want, right? It literally, I create my Rails query that like builds, you know, and you can, I mean, okay, so the thing about CTEs, right, is you can kind of think like they're subqueries or temporary tables. They're just like way more performant. And it's super like awesome. Or unlike a temp table, right? Like this one's just going to live for this query, right? It's not a view. It's not sticking around, taking up RAM. There's pros and cons to it, right? But when you do decide you want a CTE, right, you're just like, well, I want to build this query and I just want it to be available to me as, like in your example, posts with comments, right? Cool. So your API is literally, I want to grab a bunch of posts with comments, colon, here's my query. And dude, that's whatever. It's way better than anything that I wrote. I just monkey patched stuff in and janked it up, but this is clean.
So if we could circle back to that, John, we already have database views. Let's just clear up kind of what common table expressions are and how they differ from some of the other alternatives out there, like database views, as an example.
Yeah. So,
basically, I was thinking about the database views initially, but I quickly realized that it will not work in our case because our data is totally dynamic. So depending on the search query, you could type 3 characters or 5 or whatever. And it needs to be evaluated in the right time. When you are typing the query, you need to have your dynamic data. You cannot, I mean, we could put some of the stuff in the database view, but we need to do multiple aggregations later on. We need to, and we have a lot of conditions depending on the some filters that you select when you are searching. So it's our database is pretty good indexed and optimized. So database view wouldn't help much there because you have millions possibilities of code combinations that you just cannot denormalize into some view or something like that.
Yeah, one of the things about like views, right, is if you have like queries that are hitting like the exact same set of data, sort of, right? Like if you could build one view and that will work for all your queries, then you can get a lot of value out of like building a materialized view, right? Yeah. because Postgres will handle managing it, putting it together, you know, and keeping it up to date for you, right? That's super awesome. But when you kind of get into the world of like ad hoc querying, right, where you're just like, the user is dictating like which things they're going to join and, you know, all this kind of stuff, then you have to build a whole bunch of different materialized views, which could work, but you can also get, but then now you're looking at, if your RAM can't hold all of those, right, then they aren't nearly as performant. So doing something like a CTE, it just ends up working better in some cases, and in a lot of cases for us, like, so it's been a few years since I've like had to care about this or whatever. So I'm a little bit rusty, but more or less like you can get better performance from using a CTE more or less in the ad hoc space. That's where I've encountered it before. There could be like other scenarios or whatever as well.
In my experience, it's important to make this first table really small. So you have like 100 million records and the first query just shrinks it to 100,000 and then you are good to go. You're pretty safe later on and everything looks great.
Yep. There's one other thing that I mentioned, which are subqueries, right? So one of the major advantages that CTEs have over subqueries is their ability to use indexes. You don't get indexes on your CTE. At least I don't think so yet. I think not. But you get to use all the underlying indexes on the tables underneath, which is super awesome. And if you kind of follow what Vlado said, right? Like if you're using that CTE, not just to join things together, but also to like kind of filter things like in an initial filtering, you can get the advantage of, you're just not going to have to, you know, you're not going to have to search through a gigantic, you know, temp table or something.
And the good thing is once you shrink this table or filter it or reduce it, you can use it multiple times in your queries. So you can get related data, you can do some count, aggregate on it, and everything just works perfectly. Like you have standard table.
Yeah. So like,
yeah, that was one of the really cool things I thought about it, kind of, is just like the recursive search on the table where you just keep aggregating down and whittling away. That's really neat.
Or if you use the, so if you're comparing it to subquery specifically, right? So if you use this CTE like 4 or 5 times in different blocks of your query, right, where you don't have to remake your code, right, for your sub select, right? So if you find yourself repeating.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Code or whatever, it's like an easy extract, obvious, like nicety of a CTE. I'm sorry. A CTE is a nice, obvious abstraction if you're like repeating a subquery or whatever.
Yeah. Regarding the recursive common table expressions, I actually didn't use them, didn't have a need, but on the PR someone commented about the recursive queries, and then I was reading about it, and it's really, really amazing, like what you can do today with your database. Crazy stuff.
So just to, I mean, for confirmation then, so it supports recursive things then?
Yes.
Awesome.
Basically, the gem more or less delegates stuff to the with method of the RL.
Okay. Yeah. So it just
and it follows the RL API. So maybe it's not the best one, but basically, if you put the first argument as a recursive symbol, it will do recursive query. And I even realized that in SQLite, it automatically recognized the recursive query and does the recursive one even if you don't paste the recursive key.
Why do...
Sorry, Luke, you wanted to say
why,
something.
Why? That's what I want to know. Why? Why would you do a recursive query?
Actually, I don't know. I never came to the
right
to for it. But the examples
Everyone
are pretty.
Talks about them. No one. I've never seen one. I've never seen one in the wild. I want to know who's doing these recursive queries.
I don't actually know of
maybe
a good use case. I'm looking, just doing a quick Google to see if I can like get a sense of it. But I
think that maybe the good example could be that you can have like a tree structure where you have like a comment and then comment can have a comment on it. That would be like a good use case. And then you build like a common table expression that could be called treed. And then you get the treed, you know, something like that maybe. But as I said, I never used it in practice or tried something similar.
I was talking to a CTO earlier last week who worked previously with the NHS, which is Britain's version of socialized medicine for all you American viewers. The National Health Service provides free healthcare to all British people for zero cost, but perhaps quite long wait times and potentially much lower survival rates than you get in the continental United States. But we don't like to talk about that. It's free. It's free, so why complain? The NHS had a contract with a third party to do with, I think he was saying, emails. And the idea was that if the email was late, they wouldn't get money. So to keep track of this, they kept a database that contained the delivery time of every single email sent by every single person in the largest employer in the UK, which is the NHS. I think it's the biggest organization in the United Kingdom. If you imagine all of America's hospitals and doctors and dentists and everything else were combined into one organization and you were tracking performance numbers for every email, that was the scale of database he was working on. And he had a totally different perspective on how to treat databases and queries to anything I'd seen on a Rails platform, because every single query he did would just grind to a complete halt. So it became a kind of almost like a kind of survival mentality. Anything with 20 million records in it to him was tiny. He just didn't have a table with less than, you know, 9 digits in it. And I find things interesting when you were talking about the size of things you're working on that really guides these changes to Active Record and the need to kind of delve down and to add features and to start really getting close to the database. Did you listen to DHH's talk a few years ago on the philosophy behind Active Record and why he doesn't like this specific database knowledge? It's fascinating to me because I'm kind of getting more into databases. I think like John, you know, I find myself getting closer to the metal. I want to know more about these kind of recursive queries, materialized views, CTEs, because I want the performance. You know, I want things to be fast. I want things to be readable. And one of the things I really like about the Active Record CTE is you can change the language of your queries to be more readable, because you're structuring the query. So you're saying, okay, we've got loads of data. We're going to start by cutting out everything except type A things in the database. Is that correct?
You could do it that way, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got your with, you're going to say with things of the type A, you know, just get rid of everything else. And then with things that have, I don't know, CUSPRA information attached. And then you kind of build you're making your own Legos. That's how I kind of think about the CTEs. You're making your own Legos that then do the query. And my understanding is the way the database backends make these queries faster is that you've provided more structured information up front. So then the database engine can say, you know what, you know, we know what's coming. We're going to cache that whole part of a query, and then it runs a lot faster. But I don't know if that's your motivation for using these things. Is it purely speed, or are you looking for more kind of improved language in your code?
Well, I wouldn't say that was my initial idea or interest. Maybe I could agree with DHH. Maybe what he was saying is like, I don't want to care about the database. Underneath, until I really need something to be optimized or really, I just want to write simple Ruby code and that everything works. And in the moment where I have problems, I will deal with them on the database level. I think that's maybe the same approach we took. We had a problem. We couldn't use key value store, whatever didn't work for us. We needed to rely on database. And then we sat down and say, okay, what does the Postgres offer to us and what is the best thing to use in our case?
I think that's a really good point, right? So, because I come from the same perspective, right? So kind of, so I can definitely hear what you're saying, Luke, right? Like at some point you're, so in my case, so I'll talk about my case, right? So in my case, we literally had something, I don't know, it was over 20 joins going on, right? At this particular thing. And there were tables included in those joins that had tens of millions of records, right? So, and then, you know, at the end of our query, we were doing like group buys and halvings and things like that, right? And then once we'd done a bunch of work like that, then we wanted to merge that stuff, right, with other things, right? So the reason for writing a CTE was twofold for us. I mean, we had a 200 line something long query, right? It was a lot that was in text or whatever, and it was a lot to read. And I was like, this is ridiculous. So I refactored the query. We were having trouble with it. I refactored it so that it used a few CTEs so that I could understand what was going on, right? And then after I got the query going, then I wanted to convert it to Rails, right? Because I didn't want to manage it in query form anymore, right? So we were building like this really big report that did a lot of stuff. I was working for a manufacturing company. So they were trying to understand, like, in this particular period of time, are we making profit on these widgets, right? And so we had to grab like, okay, well, here are my inputs and they cost me all this stuff, right? And that was a collection of tables. Here are my outputs. I sold them for this much stuff. That's a collection of tables, right? So I'm like grabbing all of this stuff from all over the place, right? To build this ginormous report. So like for us, like that was the main motivation for us. It got faster because the previous query took 30 minutes to run. And my query, literally, when it was done, it literally queried hundreds of millions of rows and it came back with like less than 2 seconds. I don't remember exactly what it was or whatever. It was a huge speed up for us, right? So, yeah, I guess all I'm trying to say is like, you can filter in a CTE, but if you don't need to like go through like a bunch of joins and a bunch of group buys and things like that, you might as well just put your filtering in your where clause, right? You're going to get more benefits from indexes and things like that if you do that. That's what I would suggest. But oh, one last thing to tie it all together. Sorry. At the end of the day, I wrote this big query, right? But I didn't want to manage the query as text, right? I wanted to then move it back to Active Record, right? So one of the reasons that I got into Errol was because of this one huge freaking ginormous query. In fact, I learned a lot about databases doing this stuff, right? Trying to fix this one query. So like, I don't know, I didn't need to learn about databases till I had a problem that really grinded my gears and then I had to learn stuff.
Yeah, I think databases are pretty, pretty interesting, but I just never had time to really like dedicate 100% and learn all the stuff that you could use. So I was just, when the need is there, I was researching the options. So
time is of the essence when identifying and resolving issues in your software. And our friends at Raygun are here to help. Their brand new alerting feature is now available for crash reporting and real user monitoring to make sure you're quickly notified of the errors, crashes, and front-end performance issues that matter most to you and your business. Set thresholds for your alert based on an increase in error count, a spike in load time, or new issues introduced in the latest deployment, along with custom filters that give you even greater control. Assign multiple users to ensure the right team members are notified, with alerts linked directly to the issue in Raygun, taking you to the root cause faster. Never miss another mission-critical issue in your software again. Try Raygun Alerting today and create a world-class issue resolution workflow that gives you and your customer peace of mind. Visit raygun.com to learn more. Their simple usage plans start from as little as $4 per month, with unlimited apps and users. That's raygun.com to start your free 14-day trial.
Yep. One of the difficulties with Errol, like I want to say it was the 4-5 upgrade of Rails. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly when it was, but I had some trouble like converting my queries, right? Because the way that I could just inject Errol into a where clause kind of shifted slightly. And I had like unions and things going on in some places. So I remember I remember having that difficulty, and that just like confirmed for me that I didn't want to keep code as Errol. Like I wanted to always have a wrapper around it of some kind, because otherwise every time I do an upgrade, I'm at risk. Not necessarily that it's going to happen, but I'm at least at risk of having to go through all my queries and like figure out how to get them all this Errol stuff to work again with Active Record. So I just didn't like that. I think it's actually just gotten better over the years, so it doesn't matter. But
yeah, I mean, building off of that, John, too, Vlado, did you run into any issues kind of while you were diving into all of the Active Record relation stuff that kind of maybe you wish was a little better in Rails, or maybe just what took a little while to get used to as far as syntax or what's available?
Well, I must say Errol was pretty confusing at the beginning and pretty hard to write it down, because the biggest problem was for me was that it was not documented like properly or something. So more or less, I would just Google how to do this with Errol. And as John said, it often changes the way you do something. I mean, often. I found some outdated articles, but in the end, I just took a bit of look into Errol, and once you get the basic idea how it works, so Active Record sends the command to Errol, Errol builds the query, gives it back to Active Record, and Active Record sends it to database. So first thing I realized, okay, Errol is here just to produce the strings with the SQL, right? And that was the first thing. And then already it was a bit clearer, like, okay, I'm just building these nodes and I will get some SQL. It doesn't even have to be correct one in the end. And somehow then everything set in place. But I quickly realized that I want to move from writing Errol in my applications. And that's why I wrote my own implementation, and in the end, the gem. And regarding the gem, I didn't have much compatibility problems, because more or less it just delegates to the with method of Errol, which didn't change that much. But I had few problems with the pull request to Rails. I think it's, I don't know, a few years old, and it's still not merged, it's still open. And a few times, one interesting thing, I was listening to podcast, so the Ruby Rogues podcast with Eric Hayes. And he was talking about Errol also, and he's using it extensively. And in the end, after a few days after that, I realized that I got pinged on the PR on the Rails side, and I saw that it doesn't work anymore. And then I saw someone change the Errol underneath, and it didn't work anymore. And then I was checking the commits and everything, and I said, "Eric, hey, that looks familiar. That sounds familiar. Who the hell is that?" And then I realized, "Oh, I listened to the podcast with him like 3 days ago."
Yeah, I mean, Errol is definitely. I mean, in the Rails team does say right, like the Errol is what internal API, and therefore you know can't rely on it staying the same.
We do not guarantee anything.
Yeah.
But in general, I didn't have much problems and compatibility issues.
All this talk about, you know, Errol, I mean, everybody uses it eventually. Once you reach the limits of, you know, that facade that Rails gives you to access the database, you find more complicated needs. And the recommended approach is, to just write a text query and then tell Rails to use that query, you know, as raw. You know, build this raw query and execute it. And that's kind of more preferential to an existing internal API that's available. You know, maybe there's definitely a demand there, I would say, to introduce a lot of some of the internal workings to make it easier to interface with more complicated database stuff. I agree. Is Errol the right API choice? I don't know. I mean, as you said, it's complicated to get up to speed with it. Right? I've definitely had experience of a similar issue, but databases also are complicated.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah. So I don't really know a good...
You said that you were using the raw SQL and stuff like that. But I think that's actually not that bad idea to use it. If you have like a single report or something with a really complex SQL, I think it's perfectly fine if you don't need to share it everywhere. And we had like one report that literally touched every table in our database, and it was using Active Record. And in the end, it took like a few hours to generate that report, and we ran into memory, out of memory issues, and we needed to rewrite that report. And it was before this usage of common table expressions and RL and the gem. And in the end, what we did, we actually switched the reporting to SQL, that part. So the SQL gem.
Yeah, you've gone exactly where I wanted to go. I was going to say, aren't we ignoring the elephant in the room here? Aren't we? I happen to know, Vlado, that you gave a talk, which is the slides are available online, where you...
Organizing complex SQL queries.
I've been through the slides. I enjoyed them, and I noticed one of the slides makes the bold claim that SQL is better than Active Record.
Depending for what?
in what ways? I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, I think for stuff like reporting or just doing the generating the like DSL for building queries, I think that SQL is better. But Active Record is much more, and I really like Active Record. I like how easy to use it in forms and all this stuff. I really enjoy it. But for pure database tasks, I think SQL is a better choice. It's really, I don't know how Jeremy Evans does all this stuff, but it's super optimized. It supports everything. Everything is supported. API is I would say great. So I really like it. And we were thinking about using SQL here also, in where we use the common table expressions and the gem. And in the end, we gave up because this is the other application. We didn't want to introduce the new dependency and stuff. And we said, okay, Errol is something similar. Let's use Errol. And then we get to the point where we wrote the gem. But I would say SQL is somewhere between the Active Record and Errol. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, no, I actually agree with that statement, right? And we, in the past, yeah. Like I've made the same exact decision that you did, right? Which was that basically it's like, I don't want to really introduce SQL for a couple of reasons. One, extra dependency. Two, we didn't want to introduce like a tool that it came from a place, right? Where I had this app that had like five different, you know, CSV things to generate CSV files, right? And it was such a nightmare, right? So like we were like, well, we don't want to have SQL here because then like developers might, you know, try and use SQL instead of Active Record. we don't want to have that kind of thing going on. So there were like a few things, but yeah, more or less like we just didn't want, it wasn't because SQL wasn't good or couldn't do the job. We actually like thought that SQL was a good choice. We just didn't want to have that extra tool laying around where we were only using 10% of it just for this one particular case. So yeah, I mean, we've gone Errol multiple times. I've been part of that decision repeatedly, and so I'll own it. But Yeah. I'm go ahead. I wanted to ask.
I'm a vanilla Rails guy in general. So I think I don't use RSpec. I stick to Active Record. So I just like what comes out of the box. It works and it's a simple thing. So I stick to that and I really like it. So, yeah, I also like SQL, but I wouldn't, as you said, introduce it into the application for no reason, for no strong reason, without a strong reason.
Yeah. So one thing that we've kind of been talking around, and I kind of wanted to like directly ask, and I don't know if we're able to put this together or not, or if you have the right answer at your fingertips, but like, what would you say, like, when would you reach for Errol? When would you reach for just keeping it as a string? Like, what would be, I guess, like, when would you choose to use one over the other, right? And like, when would you break from Active Record in the first place in your I guess thing, like, just to try and come up with, like, I feel like we've talked about a lot of these little pieces, but like, if we could put it together, maybe the first question is, when would you break from Active Record, right, and consider picking something else? And maybe that was the easiest one to answer. And then, like, maybe if you had some thoughts on like when you would swap out for SQL or bring it in, and then when would you go with Errol, and when would you go all the way to a string? I think we've said some stuff about each of these.
Yeah. In general, I would like to stick with Active Record wherever I can. If you have pagination on your web, or it just works more than okay, and it's super convenient. You have caching, you have lazy loading, you have everything. So you don't have to care about a million of things. For example, I was writing Elixir a bit lately, and things there are not that nice and convenient and stuff. So you need to do a lot of stuff on your own. And you really see how great Rails is when you try something else, I would say. Or it just gives you a lot of stuff for free, I would say. I mean, nothing is free, but the first moment where... So if I need object relation and mapper, I would go with the Active Record. But if I need to pull a lot of data and put it in some database, CSV or something, I wouldn't use Active Record because it just uses a lot of memory. And yeah, we tried everything, forcing it not to keep internal cache and all this stuff. I don't remember everything, but it just always uses a lot of memory. But if you always show 20 or 50 or something on the page, it's perfectly fine. But if you want to generate some document, CSV, whatever, table, I would go with SQL or Errol or Row SQL, whatever, in that case.
Okay. And I guess maybe when would you pick Errol, or when would you pick, like, maybe just string? So I'm kind of thinking the thing that I'm thinking about in my case, right, is that gigantic report that I was talking about, right? Well, there were a lot of parameters that went into it. And, you know, sometimes they would have a date and sometimes they wanted to see all of time, right? So like chunks of the query would be gone, right? So we were building, you would build the query based off the parameter set, right? So it wasn't, string interpolation was possible, but pretty difficult, right? So yeah, we really,
I get,
you know, we ended up picking Errol for that reason. I was just kind of thinking, like, maybe is that, like, how would you, like, decide between Errol or just string interpolation, more or less?
Yeah. I think if I would have, like, a big query, big report or something, where you just pass, I don't know, the date from and to, I would maybe stick with the string. But as soon as there are conditions or logic or something, I would definitely go to Errol. Or SQL, whatever. Probably if you are in some Rails application or you have Active Record already, you could probably use Errol. You don't need additional dependency. But if you are not, maybe the SQL is a good choice.
Nice. Yeah. I that feels pretty good to me.
Yeah, but it's always a matter of preference. And yeah, the choice is always hard, I would say.
Yeah, I would say, okay, so one huge downside, we've talked a lot about Errol, and as somebody who's done Errol on multiple applications, I mean, I will definitely say that one of the big downsides of Errol, besides the fact that there is that change that you have to deal with, you know, when you're upgrading and things like that, the vast majority of Rails developers are just put off by it and just really struggle to, I mean, if you put a developer in front of somebody and you're like, hey, go fix this, right? Like, they'll usually fix it. But I feel like a lot of Rails developers are just uncomfortable and just don't like it. And so that can cause some just unneeded friction. In the past, I've wrapped stuff that's in Errol And I remember a talk, I want to say in the last year or two, where somebody actually created like a really good pattern for wrapping. And I haven't had another application that uses Arrow, but like my plan is to try and go find that or whatever. So I know that people are working with Arrow and trying to deal with, you know, the fact that like it kind of sucks to work with or whatever, right? But yeah, I think I would always recommend wrapping it somehow.
Yeah. One thing that in my case, in BetterDoc, we have like Innovation Friday, where you are free to do whatever you want. You can read something, you can watch something, you can investigate anything. You can even do something related to BetterDoc if you really don't like some part of the code and you want to change it, refactor, whatever you want. And this jam and most of what we are talking about now, so researching the Postgres, researching the RL, happen on these Fridays. So if I didn't have that, I don't know if I will have time to dig really deep into this stuff. And yeah, I'm a father, I have 3 kids. It's hard to find time to do that in your own time these days. So
I'm going to reveal one of my secret development management tricks. And this is a way you can get your development team to implement any feature or fix any bug. And this is how you do it. This is how you do it, right? Secret, I'll just share it with you. You give them a choice between either fixing the bug or implementing the feature or documenting it. So you can say you can either fix it or document it. And trust me, they will fix it every single time.
There is that rare breed of developer that likes to write documentation and kind of actually need more of those, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm not great at that, I must admit.
I also fall into the category of people that Luke's trick would work on.
Yeah, I would rather fix it.
Don't tell them about it, because as soon as they know what you're doing, as soon as they know the trick, it won't work.
Right, so good thing you announced it to everyone that's listening to Rooks.
Right, whose side am I really on, John? The developers or the managers?
Fair. All right. Is there anything else that you... Do we have any other questions, or is there anything else you wanted to talk about your jam or about Errol or anything sort of related?
Nothing specific.
I got a question about sharp knives. Are you familiar with DHH's post about sharp knives? 5 years old. I just looked it up. It's 5 years since the signal versus noise on sharp knives. Do you...
I think I know that one.
Yeah, I think you might, because I think you are a man with an interest in sharp tools. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes. You are. And certainly Active Record CTE is a sharp tool in my mind. This is a precision instrument when you're really getting into something, correct? Have any of your interests in working with tools influenced your software development career in any way?
Well, actually, as I stated in the beginning, Ruby and Rails influenced it a lot, because I wouldn't be programming if I didn't find that out. So
I know that you like to work with wood specifically, is that right?
Then yeah. My grandfather was a carpenter, and as a child I always was building something with the wood, and in the last 3 or 4 years the interest came back to me, so I started building things from wood.
I also enjoy, my room is a collection of enthusiastic but very bad amateur woodwork dating from the time when I started working as a science technician, so I had to build my own lab refitted. The thing about working with wood, I find, is that it's very easy to add. You can always add, but as soon as you cut something out, as soon as you make a cut or you've sawn through something, there's no going back. There's the if you've cut the thing in the wrong place, that thing is over. You can't just glue it back together. And it's kind of the opposite of software, where you can always go back to a known state.
Yeah, that is something that always attracted me to software development. When you study mechanical engineering, if you want to fix something on the car, you know, or change it or do anything, you need to invest time, you need to invest material. And if it doesn't work, it's hard to reiterate and do stuff. And programming was totally different. You are the boss, you try something, it doesn't work, you quickly iterate, you get something else. And yeah, I like that, that thing, that freedom. And if you wanted to do something in mechanical engineering, you needed resources, you needed time, you need to wait for someone always. And here you just sit at the computer and do what you like. And the similar thing is for me with woodworking as a hobby. Initially, I started because I have back problems and I sit too much and I wanted to do something with my head and standing on my feet. And you're the boss in your workshop. You do what you like. You don't do it for the money. You like what you get and you can reiterate. And even if you cut where you, you shouldn't, it's always a way to fix it. Good woodworkers are not those that don't make mistakes, but those that know how to fix it, I would say.
You haven't seen my shelving.
Yeah, we should exchange pictures.
Not in public, DMs only. It's pretty explicit. Sure. There's a lot of exposed joinery, shall we say. I do a bit of tinkering with electronics and cars, and I enjoy the contrast between software, where it is a made-up world, and when you start to work with the kind of real world, and you know it's there in front of you. There is nothing else. There's no kind of hidden things. What you have is what is there. But I think it's interesting that a lot of software people, a lot of developers, have these two kind of seemingly conflicting interests. One, they're working in a world where you can just undo everything and everything is abstract and made up, and apart from some of the maths, a kind of, you know, we've made it up, it's not real. And then they also work in a field where there are either works or it doesn't, and it's either there or it's not, and it's completely unequivocal. So that fascinates me to find. I think people need both. They need both things in their lives.
My mother always told me when I was working on a computer, that she was always, you need to find a real job. You're just don't doing anything. It's easy to just type into the computer. You need to find a real job.
Yeah, my mother did the same thing. And now I say to her, I could have been Mark Zuckerberg if it wasn't for bad parenting. If my parents had let me go on that computer all day, every day, I would have turned out to be much, much more successful. And that's the Ruby Rogues parenting lesson this week. Don't restrict any kind of access to computers, or your children will never win the computing lottery.
You could say the same of gaming too, right? Seeing some of these salaries with the Twitch League and or not salaries, but earnings from some of these gamers. That's kind of incredible.
Yeah, and I have three kids, and it's very hard to get them off the laptops and monitors and games. Crazy.
Yeah.
They can hardly think of anything else except games.
It's tough because, you know, your story at the very beginning was, well, I got interested in this computer and my friends gave me some games to play, and that's how, you know, you entered this world. But now we have all these games and we're like, huh, should we really be letting our kids play games 24/7?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what?
I see myself in them.
You know what, John? In like 30 years time, then the biggest, there'll be some kind of like a Ready Player One game, and your children will say, if only you'd let us play more games, then we would have been kind of rich and famous.
Yeah, or like we'll all be living in a virtual world and my kids will be bitter because they'll be left on the outside. Yeah, I'm worried. I don't know, man. Luckily my oldest is 5, so he's interested, but still, like, his time is very limited on the computer right now. So
are you not tempted as a child of, you're a child of the 80s like me, right? Are you not tempted to like give them some kind of classic Tandy TRS-80 and just tell them that's a computer?
Jeez. So technically I'd be a child of the 90s because I was born in 86. Sorry for revealing my age to everybody. But yeah, so not so much.
Like put a sticker on it, put an Apple sticker on it, and like kind of put an iPhone, you could 3D print an iPhone 30. They wouldn't know, would they?
I mean, right now we have this fake phone that my son uses. It's pretty great, but he knows he knows that it's not the same.
Yeah, we also keep the time, the screen time, limited, and we live on a countryside, and we have a dog, we try to walk with them, we have bicycles, so they play football or soccer and basketball and all this stuff, so we really try to keep them off the screen. But you can clearly see when they're into that, after 1 hour of playing games, if you tell them stop, they're like totally crazy. And there were some cases where we told them, okay, you cannot play games for 1 month or something like that. I don't know. They were bad at school or something. And they needed like a week to start behaving like the real the children, thinking about the games and stuff. Like for the week, they were just thinking, oh, when we get back, I will play this game. And, you know, crazy.
Oh, man. Lots of decisions.
It's hard for us and hard for them, I think.
Do we have any other questions about Active Record or Errol? Or if not, it might be time to move to picks.
Maybe I can add something. So last year, I was teaching kids programming here in our small city. It was like kids from 14 to 18 years. And I was teaching them. It was based on web development, and I showed them some JavaScript and some Ruby, and they had a hard time reading the JavaScript, but Ruby was like totally natural to them. It's like they could understand everything, you know. It's just like reading the English book or something. And if you have like 4x equals 1, you know, x plus plus, it's super hard for them to... Yeah, but you're also always surprised how quickly they can learn something, and sometimes you are surprised how clearly they can think and think it outside of the box when you give them some problems. So it was also learning lessons for me there. So
that's a nice anecdote to hear, of course, because I often feel similarly. All right.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and, in some cases, just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate, intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1 hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
Should we move to picks then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Luke, do you got any picks for us this week?
I do have some picks for you, John. My first pick.
Thank you.
My first pick is a book called Pitch Perfect. It's another audio book, and it's read by the author. And this is a book about how to pitch, not in baseball terms, but how to propose ideas, not just in the sales context, but also internally in a company. So if you want to kind of convince people to move from Active Record to SQL, for example, it gives real kind of really interesting tangible advice on how to do it. It's written by a guy who provides communication training to top executives in Silicon Valley. And it ends with a fun chapter about how you can use these communication techniques to, how do I phrase this? Improve your family life and personal relationships. It's a really interesting book about, you know, techniques you can use to kind of persuade people and to kind of understand people better. It's read by the author. It's really good. Pitch Perfect by Bill McGowan. That's my pick for this week.
All right. Awesome. Valentino?
Yeah, I got a few picks here. There's a lot of big Ruby news that's happening lately. One is Ruby Together has merged with Ruby Central, two kind of really big, prominent organizations.
What do you call that? You know, if you, Ruby Together is now Ruby All Together. What's it called?
So Ruby Together, if you're not familiar, they're responsible for maintaining Ruby Gems and getting Bundler merged to Ruby They do a lot of great, important work for Ruby community. Ruby Central, if you're not familiar, they run the Ruby and Ruby on Rails conferences, and they also are heavily involved and do lots of stuff. So it kind of makes sense that now we have one super corporation that is responsible for managing and kind of the go-to central place for Ruby. So I'm kind of excited to see what comes out of that, and all the people that are involved are all really great. So looking forward to that going forward. Another one is YJIT, which is a alternative to the MJIT, just-in-time compiler, has been merged to Ruby. So if you want to start playing with that, it is available via Ruby build. Really exciting to play around with that. The benchmarks on it are kind of incredible. And having a JIT that works a little differently from MJIT, I think it'll be really interesting to see what comes out of both of them and kind of what we can learn and advance Ruby performance-wise using them. And then the last one I have here is Penelope Phippen gave this really great talk on how the Ruby VM works and kind of like a speed run. So I would definitely check that out if you're interested learning how Ruby gets compiled and works kind of under the hood. It was really fun to watch.
Valentino, apparently, technically, Ruby Central and Ruby Together haven't merged. They've actually rebased.
Jeez. So what was the mainline branch? Like, which one rebased on the other?
I don't know enough.
Well, they kept the...
That's my only Git joke. I don't know any more Git.
is the little Rubies, was that Ruby Together's logo?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think they kept Ruby. Yeah, I think they have Ruby Together's logo. So clearly, all right. So we're rebased on Ruby Together then. Anyway, I tried too hard for that. So for this week, I've got at least one pick. So I have been trying to decide what to do with my almost 10-year-old computer that I have or whatever, especially since like purchasing anything that has a chip in it nowadays is going to cost you an entire fortune. And it might come and might be broken. And once you finally get it anyway, because you'll have to get it from some random person off of eBay or some Amazon seller that has, you know, less than 4 stars or something. So it's a rough time if you suddenly realize that your computer isn't quite hacking it and you're like, oh, I should fix that. And then the prices are just exorbitant. But you can get a pre-built computer. I don't necessarily know that I recommend all pre-built vendors. So, but I also didn't want to spend this time being like, well, these are good ones and these are bad ones. I ended up going with Digital Storm. That's who I picked. I can at least say that they're okay. I checked with like a number of forums or whatever that I frequented over the years to try and get like people's opinions and collate who is not going to be awesome and who is going to be good. It did cost me an arm and a leg. I'm spending more on this computer than I spent on my last one. And my last one was like a high-end computer, and this one's a mid-range computer. So if that tells you that prices kind of stink now, they do. That's what it is. So yeah, anyway, but still, if you are at the point where you're like, well, I need a new computer, check out pre-built computers. It might help you out. Also, there are literally people out there that are buying pre-built computers just to take the hardware out of it, like the CPUs and the video cards, just so that they can start mining. So, you know that times are dire when people are overpaying for this stuff like they are right now. I guess technically they're not overpaying because that's just what demand is, but whatevs. Anyway.
So it's a good thing to have a lot of old computers in your basement.
I have spare computers, but they, like, in the past 10 years, like, I'm struggling with 16 gigs of RAM now. It's kind of a problem. I mean, I can make it, but Chrome uses up 16 gigs of RAM on its own without even asking. So it's just the way it is.
True. So true.
It's just hard. Yeah.
Without Active Record.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, that's what it is. The other thing that I would say is I'm going to half pick this and kind of cheat, but like I'm actually kind of excited to try out Active Record CTE. I was excited for this particular episode because I was like, oh my gosh, that's a thing I do all the time and it looks better than what I use. So for my next app, I will be trying it out. So it's a half pick. It's not really full because I can't completely endorse something if I haven't ever used it before. So anyway, that's for me. Vlado, did you have anything for us?
Yes, my first pick is a book from Jeremy Evans, Polished Ruby Programming, which I read like a month ago or something like that. And I was really eager to read it because, looking at the SQL and Rhoda, and I was just surprised how this guy can handle, write all this code and handle all these issues so quickly and respond to everything. And it was I think it's a great read. I like the part where he explains the extensibility because I like that SQL and Rhoda has a small core with the plugins and in general, pretty good read. I think it has some marketing about his own gems, but I really think they are good. And the other pick is the online course for woodworking called the Wood Whisperer Guild, which is basically a platform where you buy planes with videos and detailed explanation for building fine furniture. So you pick the, chair or whatever you would like to build from the list, and you get very, very detailed videos and plans to build them. I think if you are interested in woodworking and want to step up a bit, that's a great resource.
Awesome. All right. Well, a lot of people want to like follow you or, you know, hear more about you, find out what you're doing. Where should they go?
Well, I suggest to go to GitHub, github.com/Vlado, which is my GitHub profile. And I don't use Twitter or other social networks that much. So I suppose I was not affected by Facebook going down. I didn't notice it.
Nice. Nice.
For the rest of us, it was a huge improvement.
I have an account. I do not log on very often. Cool. All right. Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for coming, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.